Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose to write to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Fat man named Hitchcock used to say, and I'm an unwise fat man, but I'm here now, and we're going to be talking tonight again with Daniel Updike of Northern Runes Radio, the Runemeister himself, and he'll tell you about his YouTube channel, his TV show, and of course we have the ever present, the man of the hour, the guy who makes Prophecy Keepers Radio what it is, has for a long time, might as well just admit it. Mark the Badger Borchnig, say hello, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh yeah, it's good. It's good to have you, Daniel. And Mark, I guess I probably want to tell you a little bit about a death in the family, and then we'll just go from there. Go ahead, Mark.
What's that? You mean Grandfather Martin?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you talked about it a little bit last week, but maybe some people didn't hear.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
It's one of the Hopi elders at Third Mesa that was kind of fairly well known. There's several YouTubes on videos of him talking about the Prophecy Rock and really just kind of nice guy. He's kind of one of the last of the group of the traditional elders there. There's some still traditional people there, but he was in a particular group. And he passed away, about a week ago this last Friday?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if it hadn't been within the week. It's not been very long.
Yeah, it was the Friday right before our last show.
Mhm.
So yeah, it's an interesting timing. I've done a lot of readings and analysis off his passing, and there's a lot of interesting things I'm noticing. So it could be a big signal for the rest of us, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead and
his passing is actually connected to Thomas Bunyaka's and let me see, I was trying to remember the other ones that did the reading for. Thomas Binyaka, then Dan Evahama, and Dan Kachongva.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you do Dan Kachongva?
Yeah, well, actually, yeah. Dan Kachongva's death and grandfather's Martin's death in the NewsHulk encounter were exactly on the same day.
Wow.
It was a dead hit. Some of these were dead hit matches. I mean, the only one and Thomas Benyaka's death was a dead hit match with Grandfather Martin's birth. But then Dan Evahama's death was in the same cycle as Grandfather Martin's and was the counterbalance. So these were all pretty, you know, significant. Some of them were dead hits, and some of them were very significant hits. So, yeah, it was there's a lot. I mean, there's quite a bit I was looking at. And as I mentioned last week, if you looked up in the current Mayan calendar, the traditional one, day count, if you took and you do what you call a life hole on, where you take the birth and the death and you unify them into one, then Grandfather Martin's life and death unified together is 9 eek.
You're kidding.
No, I'm serious. And not only that, but there's exactly between his birth and death 216 Zulcan days between the two. And
I was reading about that.
The 216 is the exact number of ceremonial days in the Hopi ceremonial cycle. So there's this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's lots of stuff like this I'm seeing with his passing. It's like all over the place. So that makes me wonder if this isn't foreshadowing other things to come, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But enough of that. We don't want to take up all the guest time.
And yeah, here we are in the middle of the blood moons. Another one coming up here this fall. It's gonna be interesting. Well, Daniel, what do you got on your plate?
Well, we've been keeping pretty busy. We're going through some of the mythologies of our ancient deities, and of course, how that relates to us today in the 21st century, and of course, talking about things from that perspective. You know, we see such a different viewpoint than that which modern society puts on us with its so much consumerism. And basically just killing our planet and cutting ourselves off from family and from relationships and from everything that really, really holds value and meaning. And, you know, we look at that and we're trying to do our part to put a dent in that cycle that's going so that people can take a moment to just stop and wake up a little bit. And, you know, see, you know, what we look at in the world around us today is not the world the way it was meant to be. It is an artificial world of concrete and steel, in the Western world anyway. And, you know, what happened to the fjords? What happened to the rivers? What happened to the streams? What happened to the forests? What happened to the sea? You know, and the way that we used to live in harmony with these things. And in fact, we had to or we died. And I think that would be the same of any tribal society in the history of the world. You know, you either got in sync with nature or you didn't stick around very long.
Right.
And, you know, we need to get back to that. We need to really look at that because if we don't, we're on a collision course, I believe, with a destiny that's not very good.
Hey, Daniel.
And, yes.
Back off on your mic a little bit. I'm still getting that fast echo. It might because you got a real strong voice, and just back off on your mic a little bit. It was the same kind of thing that was happening before we came on the air.
Okay, is that any better?
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, give that a try.
Okay, we'll give that a shot.
Yeah, it's still doing it. Dang it. Let me call you one more time, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Hang on.
All right.
I'll give this a try. I wonder what, if this is, I don't know what the problem is with.
Is it too loud?
Hello?
Okay. Yeah, we'll give this
is
one
a try.
Is
that any better?
yeah, that does seem to be better. Okay, sorry to interrupt. I know that's maddening when that happens, but it was. But as you
it all depends on the phone lines.
Yeah.
But basically what I've said is we need to wake up to the fact that if we don't get in step with nature, we're not going to be suffering a fate any different than those in the ancient past who wouldn't get in step with nature. We're going to have a destiny that we would rather not experience.
Yeah.
And we need to wake up, and I think that really is at the core of everything, because I don't care what people in the world it is or where in the world they are, we so much in our societies no longer know who we are as people anymore. And we have to understand that and come to grips with that. Because if we don't know who we are as people anymore, if we're so cut off from the things that used to give us that identity, how can we connect with anything else? How can we connect with the earth? How can we connect with all of the things that are put before us in this world in which we live? If all we're concerned about is what we can buy and sell, and whoever dies with the most toys wins type of attitude that is so prevalent, I was having a conversation earlier today with somebody from the United Kingdom, and one of the things I said was this, and that was that, you can acquire all kinds of wealth and possessions. You can have a fancy house and a beautiful car, or you can have a dozen beautiful cars, and you could have millions of dollars in your bank account. But the moment that you pass away, the moment that you die, that belongs to somebody else. The treasure that you take with you is that which you have been able to expand in your soul. And, that expansion of that growth.
That was the Thunder people agreeing with you.
that's what you take
with
you.
They would agree with that. They're in charge of that situation. you die and pass over. They say that they guys deal with both the good and the evil.
Yeah.
You can imagine what they do to the evil.
But I don't think I'd find any disagreement in that. The growth that you have in your soul, that's what you take with you. You're certainly not going to take your silver and gold with you. Somebody else is going to spend that, and you won't have a say over it. They'll do what they want. But how you grow as a person, but you can't do that. You can't even start to do that until you begin to wake up to who you really are.
Folks, I hate to admit this, but I made a mistake when I set this show up. I only set it up for a 15-minute show. So what we're going to do is I'm going to call Daniel back, and we're going to talk for a while, and then I will tack it on to the end of this show. And from what I remember, Mark's got another engagement tonight. So apologize. We'll keep going as long as it'll let us go. But I apologize for that. Anyway, yeah, just go ahead and continue. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
I apologize for that. But it'll let you run a little bit longer. So, yeah, I really apologize. It was just one of those little switches that you got to watch what you're doing when you're setting up a blog talk show. So, Anyway.
So you're gonna call him back and then record it and then post that archive?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right. Apologize.
I think
apologize,
it just died. I think
yeah.
I mean,
we're
no, wait.
Still.
Yeah. It cut.
Okay, so we'll just keep talking. But anyway, at least the audience knows, you know, what's going on. So well, let's just – we got the three of us on the air. Let's just keep going, and then I'll tack it on to the end. Sorry about that. Oh, what a mess tonight. I apologize.
It happens to everybody. And, you know, I've had it with our platform where it'll all of a sudden go completely blank, and you won't tell. All your meters are going. But then when you're playing back the file, you'll see where there's supposed to be a waveform,
yeah.
A flat line. And say, okay, how do I fix that? And, yeah, it happens all the time to everybody.
So did you figure out how to edit audio?
Oh, yes. Yes,
okay.
I've had to learn how to do all of that. And,
good.
And, yeah, yeah, and boy, some of the early shows that we did, I'm surprised that people listened to it because our audio equipment was so bad, it sounded like we were talking down a hallway 50 yards away. we ended up getting better at it as time went on. But, you know, looking at the world and the things that are going on today, I know I'm curious on my part as to what your take is on things. You know, where do you see the world? Because, of course, I'm always interested in finding out, you know, the way one person put it, the thought that floats in other people's minds. And, Do you think that the things that I'm saying are similar to what you would say?
Oh,
yeah.
Hell yes. Yeah.
You're right in line with what most of the native elders that, you know, have any lick of sense left in their head and traditional thinking ways, most of them are just waiting for the shoe to drop, so to speak, right now. And it's dropping. We're seeing the indicators. It's just a question of, you know, our timing. So yeah, we could be facing some pretty serious situation here in a few years, and it's already moving. And some of them are, so even mainstream guys are talking about. There's a guy, last name is Casey. You look him up on the internet, and he's talking about us heading into a mini to a full blown ice age. And this guy's a leading climatologist, weather person. He's written a book, I think, what was it, Cold Sun, and another one, two books. There's several, if you do a YouTube search on Casey, C-A-S-E-Y, and then Sun and stuff, you'll probably find two or three of his videos. And this guy's not a slacker, you know, he knows his stuff, and he's not just blabbing. He's got stuff to back him up. And I think so you got that, and on the other side of the fence you got the thing about our planet and our magnetic fields in our core being affected. And so, and that would lead, these things will feed into each other. So yeah, the planet right now is, and this goes in with some of the Hopi, they talk about the twins at the poles and them shifting and things happening on Earth, their weather and all this stuff. And so, yeah, but the Hopi also, and most of the native cultures, they also tie our attitude and our behavior to the weather changes, to these other things. So it's like the Hopi elders, they said, you know, whenever they get a bad year, and their crops are failing, they say the first thing they got to do is look at themselves, look inside themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they would agree 100% with what you're saying.
You know, that reminds me very much of a story that was told in one of the saga stories of our people back from a long, long time ago before Christianity. And they used to believe, and we still do, in the, in what we call the land spirits, or the landvithir. And this individual was in the middle of his harvest, and he, you know, had many people helping him harvest the field. And he noticed this tiny little creature that looked almost like a, you know, miniature little man carrying a single stalk of grain. And he stopped and he mocked it and said, you know, oh, basically in modern vernacular, don't strain yourself too hard, you know, indicating he was being lazy carrying a single stalk of grain. He did not know that this was one of the land spirits, and it looked at him and said, as it cast down the piece of grain in anger, "You will not have another good harvest again for a long time." And his land was basically barren for several years afterwards, because he did not realize that the land spirit was carrying the good fortune of the entire harvest in that stalk of grain. And what, through ignorance, he did, he reaped the rewards of in a very negative way. And that connection with the things that we may not intellectually understand, that are part of the very energies of the earth, you know, we have to have respect for it. And we have to have that consciousness that, you know, we are not the top of the heap. We are part of a system. And each system is dependent upon its many parts. And you know, we should be acting as a part of that system, trying to build that system up, rather than being filled with the attitude that we are somehow the lords of the earth, and we shall do with it as we will. And, you know, that attitude that has been pervading Western society, not slamming anybody, but of course, you know, with some of the advent of monotheism and so on and so forth, and some of the things that happened as a result of that, you know, we are not above other things that live. We are a part of a system of things that live, that are connected, all interconnected. And, you know, I can't agree with you more that, you know, that story you just told, you know, a bad harvest or a bad year, to look first within ourselves. You know, that resonates very strongly. And, you know, if we don't start doing that, if we don't start looking within ourselves, if we keep trying to find the answer out there and pointing fingers of blame, we're never going to come to any answers. You know, we're never going to come to any solutions either. You know, and that's really what the biggest thing is. Anybody can find fault, but finding a solution, that's the challenge. And, you know, I like the way Einstein put it. You cannot solve a problem on one level, okay, from the same level that the problem exists on. You have to think of it from a different perspective.
Yeah, the Hopi say something, too, that kind of fits with that. They say that we can't fight. They say the part of our problem is we're people are forcing their will upon another. And then they said after that, they said we cannot fight that problem doing the same thing, that the only thing we can really fight with is the energy or power of truth itself.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the problem is you have to have people that can actually hear truth. You would see people eating, dancing, walking around, talking, and doing everything, but they said they are dead. So they're spiritually dead. They're not capable of listening. They're just a body walking around doing stuff. And I'm afraid that's a large part of what we're seeing right now, is just a lot of people in that state.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not a a simple thing to awaken and to not be spiritually dead, as you say. Because, you know, when we're stuck in the rut of consumerism, and when we don't look at anything else outside of that, you know, we are like corpses walking around. But, you know, we have to face ourselves if we're going to wake up. We have to see who we really are, and sometimes what we are isn't that pretty. You know, and we have to, you know, we see the challenges in front of us that we have to work on to become better than what we were. And that's not just, you know, oh, I should help little old ladies across the street. There's no problem with being that. But I mean, you know, character. You know, what kinds of things are we thinking about? What kinds of deeds do we have in this world? You know, are we the kind of people that are going to build others up, or are we the kind of people that are going to rip others down? Are we the kind of people that are going to show respect for the energies of the earth and of the universe itself and for other people? Or are we the kind of people that are going to be arrogant? You know, are we going to allow ourselves to realize that there's more to life than what we see and perceive through the five senses of the body? You know, what does that do to our paradigm, to our worldview? You know, that connection that we have, whether we're aware of it or not, to all things. You know, are we going to allow ourselves to go through that process of having our paradigm that we were raised and indoctrinated into getting torn down around us, which is not very pleasant, and then having it rebuilt into something that is reflecting the nature of what life actually is? And, you know, not a lot of people, unfortunately, are willing to do that. It frightens them, you know, and the responsibility, you know, that we're responsible for our lives and we're responsible for, you know, what we do. You know, we can't point our finger and put that responsibility on somebody else or on some other deity or something like that. We have to take that responsibility for ourselves and realize that, you know, we're accountable. Not to some deity that's going to rain fire and brimstone on us, but we're accountable to ourselves because we are a part of that system. And we cannot escape the results and consequences of our actions. And, you know, that frightens a lot of people. A lot of people go running the other way. They go running back into the fold of something that teaches what they want to hear. And, you know, to awaken means to be facing that. And then, you know, when that new paradigm is erected in your mind and that understanding of your soul and of how that is connected to everything else becomes real to you in your experience, it changes your view on everything. And then I think you can hear truth because you're wired up for it then. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it just sounds like, you know, I really wonder, you know, since the Scandinavians got here and the Templars apparently got here long before the other Europeans do, if I was to go ask Ed McGaugh, you know, was there cultural or religious exchange, you know, between the earlier, he'd say, oh yeah, he says it's almost like, you know, the Celtic religion, which he studied a little bit, and native spirituality are just, they have to somehow be related because there's so much. Hey, Daniel, do you know who Ed McGaugh is?
I've heard the name, but I honestly do not recall.
Yeah, he's written about 10 books on native spirituality and.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, I'm starting to get a picture now. Yeah,
yeah, he's quite a guy, but he's pointed out the similarities, and but that's about as far. But it, you know, it stops with Christianity because it just doesn't it doesn't seem to jive with but yeah, he's pretty outspoken on it.
Well, a lot of people think that the conversion of Europe to Christianity was, you know, missionaries went out and preached and people converted. It was actually about 1,000 years of war.
Yeah.
And it was not all dead. Oh, there were some people that genuinely converted, but for the most part, it was done by torture and by seizing lands and outlawing people from their own families and, you know, making war with countries and you know, on the tip of a sword, they had to convert. And, you know, it was a stripping away of the entire tribal heritage of countless tribes of people and amalgamating it all into this one religion. And they even tried to appropriate a lot of the holidays and change the names to suit saints or to suit different seasons that they started to celebrate in Christianity. I like the, you know, Easter, for instance. You know, that's when they talk about the resurrection of Jesus. Well, of course, Easter, they didn't even change the name of the holiday, is the Teutonic goddess of spring. And, you know, the creatures of the earth that were sacred to her were rabbits and eggs.
Yeah.
You know, Yule used to be one of the highest holidays. And, of course, now that's modern-day Christmas. And, you know, why is it that they made that Christmas? Well, they couldn't change the holiday. It was too firmly entrenched. But they changed its name.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did all kinds of things like that. And, of course, you know, when you take a look at the Vikings that came to North America, now, some of them were already converted, but not that far into the conversion period. You take a look at Leif Erikson, for instance. They've rebuilt villages out in Newfoundland, a province on the east coast of Canada. They rebuilt villages where he actually lived, and they traded all across. And they were there for quite some time, a lot longer than was originally thought. You know, they didn't.
Oh, they were coming down to Virginia into the early 1500s, at least.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it wasn't. They weren't trying to convert anybody. They weren't. You know, they had so many variances in their own beliefs. Like, for instance, we have two tribes of gods: the Aesir, the gods of consciousness, and the Vanir, the gods of the cycles of the earth. And if you were, say, dealing with Tyr or Olden of the Aesir, you know, it would be quite acceptable for you to walk into a sacred space wearing your sword, because they were gods of war. If, however, you went to a place where they honored the Vanir, and you went into a sacred space for the god Frey, it was considered a grave misconduct for you to carry a weapon of war into the house of the god of peace and plenty. And so, you know, and yet it was the same way, the same faith, if you want to put it that way. But, you know, there was just many variations and different emphasis depending on, you know, whether it was a place more agricultural or more hunting oriented or more, you know, but yet there was knowledge that passed through the tribes. But Christianity tried to wipe that out in order to unify Europe and to make, you know, because, of course, the church was very political at that point in time, you know, a very powerful base in which to increase wealth. And that, of course, carried through in the, you know, firm Christian era into the dealings of people from Northern Europe with other peoples that they came in contact with. And you can see the difference like night and day. You know, they tried to convert everybody. They went and they tried to kill everybody. They went and they tried to do this to everybody. You know, you take a look at all these different things. And I look at it, you know, we talk about the cycle of abuse. And, you know, the people of Northern Europe in the later years, Middle Ages and afterwards, did unto others exactly what had been done unto them. You know, the abused became the abuser.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked at that, and, you know, yeah, you can see that. And you know what? I think a price has been paid for that. And there needs to be a call, because we looked around, and you know, you see people from all over the world seeking out, you know, dissatisfied with the line that they've been given by the modern religions of the day and the modern spiritualities of the day, dissatisfied with that, looking into their own roots, looking into their heritage, looking into who they were and who they are, and, you know, finding out, you know, hey, you know, there were heroes in my past. There were people that connected with the earth in my past. There were people that, you know, had a real sense of who they were as people. And not only that, they had that connection to their family and to their tribe that which we don't have or experience. You can live in an apartment building and never know your neighbor. There might be 100 other people living there. And, you know, that's the way it is in the modern world. But, you know, that tribal mentality. Yeah, we can't turn back time. We're in the 21st century. We all know that. But the thing is, though, is that we can have a different viewpoint. And it's time to stop buying the line that, you know, and I speak to anybody listening from Northern European descent, stop buying the line that was forced on your ancestors 1,000 years ago. Okay? Stop buying the line, and this is for everybody, that the governments of the world are telling you and that the companies of the world are telling you that, you know, your life is to buy goods and services. And start looking into who you really are. Start looking into what makes you a conscious, living, spiritual being. You are not a physical being having a spiritual experience, or not, as the case may be, depending on where you're at, you are a spiritual being having a physical experience. We are not this crude matter. We are brilliant beings that are a spark of the very source of all things. We are made of the same stuff as the gods. But we have believed that we are nothing. And so, we became slaves.
Well, that's slaves, what they said, that the best slave is the person that doesn't even realize they're a slave, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we can break free from that. We can break free from that by opening that awareness. And, you know, it isn't sunshine and roses. You know, not when you're going through it. I know I was raised in a preacher's house. You know, I had everything that I ever was taught that was true stripped away from me. And, you know, it's not a nice feeling. I have no words to put to that. You know, even though I had experiences when I was very young. You know, when your parents are indoctrinating you and you're community, either from the church, is indoctrinating you, and then all of a sudden that's stripped away. You know, it's like you're in a void somewhere. And then to have it rebuilt and to realize, okay, this is what it feels like to connect with the energies of the sky and the earth. This is what it feels like to connect with another human being. And I mean really connect. You know, I could use my wife as an example. You know, I've been with her for 15 years. And it's just as if it was yesterday. That connection that's there. We're fortunate. We have that.
And, you know, the connection to other people, to animals, to the earth, to the living things that are on this planet with us, not as lords and masters, but as part of the system that it is. You know, it's liberating. You know, yes, that responsibility is there, but it's liberating because you are not enslaved anymore. You are a free person. And you have to pay the price for your decisions, but the decisions are yours to make. And, you know, to have that sense of community with people where you can get together and you know that you can make a difference somehow, even in ways that you might not be aware of, just by letting that freedom shine out that is, you know, that real connection to not only one another, but to the very universe itself. And I know I'm talking about some things that are very hard to put words to, but I don't know, the message of it is something I think people really need to hear, and it doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter where they are. If we don't listen to that message, we're going to miss the point of being here in the first place. And nature abhors a vacuum. You know, if we're not going to be awake, and if we're going to tamper with things, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, yeah, we're going to have a destiny that reflects the results of our actions. And all these red moons that you're talking about, I think we had 4 red moons last year. We've already had 1 this year. We had an eclipse of the moon that happens once every 500 years, I believe, just not too long ago. And, you know, from the angle that the moon is to the earth. And there's another blood moon, you said, coming?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah, everything is trying to tell us something. And it's yelling. It's shouting.
Oh, yeah.
But do we have ears to hear?
You're saying this is kind of hard to go through and you have stuff stripped for you. What the Hopi say is coming to us is they call it Purification Day.
I think there's at least 2 more. I think there's at least 2 more coming. There may be 3 more coming. Was the first one this? I've lost track now. But yeah.
We've had 1 blood moon already.
Right? I believe.
Really fascinating story out of New Jersey. There was a rabbi who's been going around teaching that, you know, the I guess there was a sycamore tree or some kind of tree. Basically what he said was what happened at 9/11 was foreshadowed in the Old Testament, right down to the types of trees that were planted and withered and you know, certain statements being made, but yeah, the whole thing's, I can't remember the fellow's name, but it all kind of revolves around what they call the Shemitah year, Shemittah, mm-hmm. or the Shemitah, the mystery of the Shemitah. And there's only been a couple times in history when they've had lunar eclipses line up on Jewish High Holy Days. And what had happened before, it was very momentous. I think the last time it happens when their temple was destroyed in 70. And so they're looking at it pretty. And John Hagee wrote a book about it. But it's remarkable what's going on. And then with all the stuff that's going on in the country and the economy and rumors of military rule and what people call martial law, there's just all kinds of unrest and rumors of rumors, and yeah, it doesn't doesn't leave one with a really easy feeling. Unless they go back to watching TV and then they forget about it.
Something like a good drug.
So, hey. Oh. But yeah, it's right on a wavelength. Oh yeah, it's amazing. I wish we could get Mike Bastien on the air and have the two of you guys compare stories about the elementals and the little people because it'd probably shock you.
That'd be fascinating.
Oh yeah, and traveling without through time and space at will, and which is witnessed several times. And but yeah, it's interesting. And yeah, Mad Bear was passed away in 85, but he was kind of looked upon as the spiritual father of the American Indian movement, and then they got off into devilment. He basically had become thugs. And so, leaves a few voices crying in the wilderness as peacemakers. And yeah. if you get enough guys together that have your similar beliefs, sooner or later, I don't know. I would be surprised if sooner or later, it would come to some kind of disagreement, dispute. It just seems to go along with the, I don't know what it is. It just seems to go along with these kind of subjects. And but anyway.
Well, the joy of it is the differences, and
yeah.
One of the things that is a truth. It's one of the few truths of the capital T that we can understand, because a lot of it is something that, because of our dualistic minds, we think of left and right and up and down and what's me and what's not me and what's within and what's without. Really, that's illusionary. But one of the things we can understand is that, we manifest from within. And, every person sees things, even though we're connected. It's that connection that gives us the context of our individual experience, actually. But everybody sees things a little bit differently, because the challenges that they have set in front of them are not the same challenges set in front of you. And so you could even, say, physically be standing together, looking at the same tree on the same hill. But the aspects of the tree your friend sees will be different than the aspects of the tree that you see. It doesn't mean that you're right and he's wrong, or he's right and you're wrong. It means you just saw a different aspect of it. And, when we learn to accept that and get away from the dogmatism, because I think that's one of the things that kills spirituality, is being really, really dogmatic.
Right.
Because, what happens then is that not only do you have somebody right and somebody wrong, now you have somebody who is good and someone who is evil, even though they may do nothing different than you, except they see things from a different perspective. And so now you have a new reason for war, besides greed and all the other usual reasons. Now you have righteousness.
Yeah.
You see what I mean here? And it ends up becoming a self-perpetuating cycle.
And then what Dr. Phil calls right fighters.
Well, it's interesting because, what we're talking about here really is, there were probably people in the previous world cycles having pretty much the same discussion as we are right now about why we got to the point where we are, why the cycle's ending and all this stuff, and wondering how to stop it from happening again in the next cycle. And so far, we've been through Hopi. According to them, we're on the fourth world right now. So we've had three, screw ups before, maybe more. And we just haven't figured out, what to do. It's this pretty surmountable problem because, it appears that, when you start a world cycle, everybody's on the same page and they're doing pretty good. And you got people that, knew what they were doing, spiritually handled themselves and all that. But, 1,000 years pass, 2,000 years pass, and pretty soon, the mess just creeps back in again. So far, no one's figured out how to prevent it us from falling back in the same trap again. It doesn't seem like we figured out. Now, I thought of it one time. I was talking with someone. I said, we'll make a constitution type thing when we first started the world cycle. I said, well, everybody's already did that. They just figured that out too. And I said, maybe what we need to do is do what Captain Kirk did on Star Trek. I think it was the second Star. I think it was the Wrath of Khan movie when they were talked about when he was in Starfleet Academy, and they had what they call the Kobayashi Maru
simulation. I remember that.
Of course, Captain Kirk. it's an unwinnable situation, which no matter what decision you make in the simulation, you're going to lose. And Spock designed it, I guess, and Captain Kirk was the only one that ever beat it. But the way he beat it was he went in the night before or whatever and reprogrammed the computer so he could win. I'm thinking, that's what we need to do. We need to go in and reprogram the simulation of Planet Earth Learning School so that we don't fall in the same trap again. We need to pull a Captain Kirk.
Oh, it'd be nice if it was that easy,
They said that, he obviously got in trouble for reprogramming the computer, but he also got an accommodation for original thinking.
Yeah. that's kind of like the story about my Green Beret friend back during the Vietnam War. They'd go into town and get drunk and start fights, and then the MPs would chase them back to the base. And they had a spring-loaded gate that, they would be on the radio and they would say, okay, we're all in, shut the gate. And it would be just inches in front of the local cops. And, yeah, it kind of reminds me of that. In other words, if you get caught, you get in trouble. If you get caught by the local cops, you're in trouble. But if you evade them, you stand a good stead with your CO because they just treat it like a training exercise, those poor local cops. That's what they did was they were actually rewarding him for breaking the rules, but because he did it in such an original way, they went, And that just proved that he would make a good politician and come up in the ranks and be an admiral, because you got to be a politician to be an admiral. So they were there.
Well, you'd have to be a strategic thinker for sure to have any sense of command, because that's one thing. If you're just responsible for yourself, but if you were responsible for the lives of hundreds of other people, that's a big thing. That's almost as bad as being an air traffic controller. Fall asleep at the scanners there.
No kidding. Yeah, I know my dad's brother graduated from the Naval Academy, and just as Carter was coming into office, they offered him a star, a flag rank. And he basically just gave the finger and said, no way, There was no way. And then when Bush is coming into office, I visited him a few weeks after 9/11, he was on a short list for Secretary of the Navy. But, he had real strong opinions about, we felt somebody had sponsored the attack. He says, I worked at the Pentagon. He says, you know, that hole that missile made to hit the Pentagon. He says, my office was on the third floor directly above the hole, you know. And, you know, he told me what was stored in the office. And, you know, the most sensitive ballistic submarine secrets. But, you know, but the hole was right next door to it destroyed the records of the over $1 billion that the Secretary of Defense said was just missing. It's just weird. It's just strange. You know?
That's an interesting coincidence.
And then they were expected not to believe in conspiracies and when it's so obvious what's going on, you know. I mean, the CIA director said about 40 years ago their goal was to get it to the point where they could tell the American public anything and they would believe it. So.
Well, yeah, I think that's just about everywhere where there's mass media. You know, here in Canada, we have the same type of thing. And, you know, albeit, you know, the thing is that when they get caught, they're caught red-handed. You know, they end up getting into some deep trouble. We had a premier exiled as a result of that.
Trudeau, are you talking about?
No, this was actually a provincial premier. Trudeau, everybody hated him when he was in power. He reigned over Canada from about the 1960s till the early 80s because we don't have the two-term rule here. You can get elected as many times as you want. But, you know, when he was gone, you know, everybody longed for Pierre Trudeau because he had some backbone to him.
Yeah.
He's the only prime minister, I think, that we've had that actually invoked the War Measures Act.
Okay.
What was that?
See you guys, check you guys later, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark's got to leave us in there. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
But I'm sure Trudeau, when he invoked it, he was very polite when he did it, right?
Not really. Apparently, there had been some sort of explosion that had happened that had injured some people, and he was concerned that there was some sort of plot going on, and so he invoked the War Measures Act. And my brother, who is older than I am, remembers the scene when the national news comes on and he shows up on the news there, you know. I have just invoked the War Measures Act, which gives special powers to the government. The Constitution of Canada has been suspended. You now will be under curfew, yada, yada, yada. Those of you bleeding hearts that don't like to see helmets and guns will just have to bleed, I suppose. Good day. You know,
sounds polite to me.
But yeah,
who was the provincial premier? How long ago? When was this?
The provincial premier was concerned. This is actually quite recent. This was not back in the 60s or early 70s. This is actually just a couple of years ago, I guess using taxpayers' money for private flights. Everything else, they had all kinds of mismanagement. She was forced to resign.
Huh.
And not only that, they just had a provincial election, and her replacement got obliterated in the polls. So,
but they didn't.
Well, let's see. The Conservative Party has been in power in Alberta for 44 years. And now the New Democratic Party, which is on the opposite end of the spectrum, won a majority government. So they went from one side to the other.
Well, you know, one of the most fascinating movies I've ever seen was a movie about the fellow that ran through socialized medicine in Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan? Mm.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And what was his name?
That was Tom.
I believe.
Right,
the last
right.
name escapes me at the moment, but he was an NDP leader. And I think he founded the party. I'm not certain. That was a long time ago. That was like...
Yeah, the 30s.
Yeah, way, way back.
Yeah.
And, of course, his name is just on the tip of my tongue.
Oh, that's okay.
But...
Americans don't know this story. It's an amazing story.
Well, he thought that, you know, people shouldn't have to shell out to have necessary things done for them medically. It's very much different than the stuff that's going on in the States right now. This was an actual funded government health care. And,
right.
What happens with that, now, it's deteriorated a great deal over the years.
I'll bet.
Because,
yeah,
of course, abuse over the years, you know. As soon as you put the word medical on anything, the price of it goes up, who knows how much. And so, of course, that's because it's government-funded, is money in the pockets of people that are producing equipment and so on and so forth. But, you know, if a person has a need for a heart operation, they still are not out of dime. They don't have to go mortgage their house to go have a heart operation.
Yeah.
You know, the big inconvenience now is that if you have to go to the doctor, you're going to be waiting for a couple of hours.
No, same
hour. To get in, you know. Whereas before, it used to be like 15 minutes. You know, now you can wait anywhere from 2 to 4 hours to get in to see the doctor. But, again, you're looking at places where, you know, because doctors get paid more in the States, doctors getting trained here in Canada and going down to the States to do their practice. And so we have shortages of doctors up here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can't blame, you know, everything on the medical professionals, because there's just not enough of them. And so they're putting in 12-hour days, and, you know, you don't want somebody that's falling asleep on their feet operating on you. You got to give them a bit of a break. But it's frustrating for the people that are in pain, because, of course, they're suffering and they want to get attention. And, you know, for people that are on this side of the border that complain about the American healthcare system, I will say that my wife had an issue happen to her when we were visiting down in the States. And they treated us very, very well. You know, there was no hassle or anything. You know, of course, we have insurance. But the thing is, you know, we got treated better there than we do here. So it was kind of a, you know, they had an ultrasound that they were doing that through technology, the doctor in the town that had originally sent her up to this hospital to get this done was watching on his laptop while it was being done. Here they'll send it away to a person who process it, and then the doctor will get to see it. So there's a middleman in between there.
Uh-huh.
This was all done, and by the time we walked out of there, we knew what the diagnosis was.
Yeah.
So, you know, you sometimes don't know how good you've got it until you have to go somewhere else. And you know, that's what I would say to some of the folks down in the States, is, you know, you may have some problems. I have no doubt that you have some problems with the way your healthcare system works and everything down there. Try it up here. Try it.
Yeah.
Try it in some of the places where, you know, you're going to sit there, and you know, and then you know, see a specialist. You're going to wait 6 months to get in there to even see him. So, you know, I don't know how we even got on this topic, but you know, we sometimes forget how good we've got it, and that's true where it comes to, you know, our lives in general, in everything that we, you know, take for granted, we forget how good we've got it. And we have a lot of things that are challenges to us right now, like with, you know, all the blood moons and all of the different signs that are out there, you know, that we need to wake up and that we need to,
you know, become something, connected once again, you know, becoming more aware of who we really are and aware of the connections that are there. But we have the opportunity to do that still, you know. And, you know, with all of the news and things in the world that are going on, a person can get really down and really depressed by, you know, oh, another bit of bad news. Oh, something else is going on. Or, you know, there's a distraction. And, you know, we may laugh for a little while, but, you know, it's always in the back of our minds. But yet we forget that we still have time. We still have that opportunity. And what we do with that time is going to be what makes or breaks us and everything around us.
Yeah, but you really need to keep an eternal perspective. You know, you can't not believe in an afterlife, and as far as I'm concerned, and have any kind of sense of humor. You know, mm-hmm. it's just like you know, my wife's 65, and when she was you know, in her 20s, her sister was murdered, and she never got over it. And I've been encouraging her since the 5 years we've been together to just remember, hey, you know, you can't kill us. You know, she's just out of the room right now, and you're going to see her again real soon. And you know, probably, you know, you'll probably see her enough during eternity, you'll get sick of her. You know, it's just, you know. You know, just you just got to be a little bit of patience, and a strange concept. I'm encouraging Linda to think about a strange concept that my second wife came up with, which was, as far as she was concerned, with all the crap that she was put through with sexual abuse by her, you know, her father-in-law, and who brought along the buddies, and, you know, being locked in private cases and all that other kind of stuff, and PTSD. She said the only way I could figure that this life can be fair is if we designed somehow the experiences, or chose the experiences we were going to go through in this next go around. She said that's the only thing that makes sense to me. but it's kind of a strange way it makes sense to me too. And because otherwise. You know, it kind of breaks the Star Trek, you know, you don't mess with a civilization's timeline and a prime directive kind of thing. And it kind of makes, and I don't know anybody out there that really has thought about, I'm sure somebody else has, but that's an interesting
perspective for sure, because, you know, I think that there's a lot of things that, you know, we agree to before we come into an incarnated life, based upon what we need to grow.
Right.
And, you know, that, you know, if we all had the same challenges, where's the growth in that? We're all faced with a specific set of challenges that are unique to us. And, you know, other people may have similar challenges depending on, you know, where you're at and what kind of situations it is. But, you know, you just like when I was talking about two people looking at the tree, there's a different perspective that's taken in. There's a different lesson that's learned as a result of that. And, you know, certainly we can determine, I believe, a lot of the severity of those experiences based on some of the decisions that we make. If we are stubborn and don't want to learn a lesson, I think that lesson can be something that's like a Rolodex.
Yeah.
Dating myself here, those used to be popular in the 70s before smartphones, you know, for keeping track of phone numbers. You know, or it just keeps coming around over and over and over again. And, you know, it's something that, you know, you're either going to learn or you're going to face the challenge again. And if you don't learn it in this particular lifetime, guess what? You're going to face it on the next one. Because,
yeah. You
know, there it is. And it's there for a reason, so that we could become something more than what we were. And
sure.
We look at the little picture of it all and say, oh, how horrible. But yet when we realize on the big picture of it all that this was actually causing this change to happen at the soul level and the personal, and you realize, oh, that's the reason why that was so important. And, you know, once a lesson's learned, you don't have to learn it again.
Right.
So you keep moving forward, keep moving forward. But we have to be like, it was either yourself or the other fellow that said, you know, the people that are able to listen to truth, we have to be able to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
In order to know. And, you know, without that, we're like blind people wandering around wondering, you know, if we're going to get hit by the car as we're crossing the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to have that awareness. And I guess, you know, all other things in our conversation aside, I really felt in my spirit to be pushing that forward there, because there's people there that need to hear this.
That's right.
They need to hear this right now. You know,
and, you know,
right
and,
on the verge.
And before we go, I want you to be sure and tell people, you know, how to get a hold of your website and any books that you might publish, or your YouTube channel, or yeah, how do they find you?
Okay, the easiest way to find us is simply to type in Northern Runes Radio into any search engine, and you'll find a plethora of ways to get a hold of us, because we're on several social media platforms. Our website is northernrunesradio.com, and Northern Runes Radio is all one word. And you can email us very easily at the easiest email address. It's just all one word, runesradio@gmail.com. And I respond to everybody who emails me.
Excellent. Well,
that's how you can get a hold of us. And you can find and listen. And you know what? We don't hold copyright. You know, if somebody wants to share our broadcasts, we're not going to complain. You know, if somebody wants to, you know, share that, download that, do whatever they want with it, as long as it's something that gets the message out.
That's always been my attitude.
So that's basically, in a nutshell, you know, how you can get a hold of the NRR.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you. We'll let you get back to your family, and I'll make sure this audio gets uploaded and everything will be okay. Appreciate you. Well, thanks.
It'll be good.
Anything else you feel like you need to share?
Just one thing. I want to thank you very much for having me on the show, and I want to just say that I really appreciate what you're doing. And, you know, I can see and sense and I hear how you're trying to get the message out. And
Yeah. This
is something that's got to be a cooperative effort throughout the world. And if there's any way that we can promote you, let us know.
Oh, you bet. We just plod away at it, you know. And but anyway, but we'll be in touch. Thanks a lot, Daniel. Talk to you
again.
Thank
you very much again.
Hey, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater.